ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Out of fear of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the wind blows. Out of fear of Him, the sun shines. Out of fear of Him, the rain pours forth showers. And out of fear of Him, the host of heavenly bodies shed their luster. Purport. The Lord states in Bhagavad Gita, Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate. Nature is working under my direction. The foolish person thinks that nature is working automatically, but such an atheistic theory is not supported in the Vedic literature. Nature is working under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, and we also find here that the sun shines under the direction of the Lord, and the cloud pours forth showers of rain under the direction of the Lord. All natural phenomena are under superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. In this verse, the term yad bhayat, out of fear of whom, is repeated. Comes up four times, once in every line. Refers to the Supreme Personality of the relationship between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and various sample demigods. He doesn't list all the demigods and all the things they do, but just some are given as examples, and more examples will be given in the following verses. And as Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport, everything is working in this material world under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How is it working? Here, the point of fear is stressed. Now, the different demigods, they are responsible persons. The God of the sun is mentioned here first. The God of rain, first is mentioned the God of wind. So these are all responsible persons. They're devotees, and they perform their entrusted duty, the duty to entrust it to them by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, out of a sense of responsibility. But fear, as is stressed here, fear is also there. There are different reasons why people do things. One reason for doing something is out of love. Another reason is out of fear. If someone needs to get something done, there are different ways you can get people to do it. Well, just like an old man, his son, he expects the son will serve him and help him in his old age. That is maybe out of love or a sense of responsibility, not out of fear. No one's afraid physically of an old man. You can also pay someone to serve. And out of fear, maybe in this example it's a little difficult to see how they could be fear, but there are many examples of how people do things out of fear. That they're just afraid that if they don't do it, they'll get punished. You're driving along as fast as you can towards a red light, and you're not planning to stop. Then you see a policeman, and then you quickly come to a halt because you're thinking, if I don't, I'll have to pay a fine. So out of fear. Now, the demigods in the heavenly planets, here it's mentioned out of fear. A devotee acts out of love. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yame bhaktya prayachati. One offers the Supreme Lord, fruit, leaf, flower, and water, the devotee offers in love. That's the motive. Others, other forms of religion, they stress fear more. If you just like Nanda Maharaj wanted to worship Indradev out of a sense of gratefulness, but he was also afraid if we don't do so, then Indra may not send forth the rain and then we'll be in trouble. Many people say like that, that if I take to Krishna consciousness, I have to stop worshipping all the different demigods. We're afraid they might be angry with us. And it seems that many times they are, actually. They become angry. Of course, Krishna protects his devotees, his surrendered devotees, just as he protected the Brajvasis. Indra, he did become angry with them, very much so. But his expression of anger was in the form of sending forth torrential rain, was easily contained by Krishna. So the demigods, they're doing out of a sense of responsibility. They have also respect and affection for the Supreme Lord, but fear is there also, because they're not fully pure devotees. They're afraid. If I don't do it, I'll lose my position. I'll be punished by the Supreme Lord. Those who are demoniac, they like to show that they're not afraid of God. That they don't, they say they don't believe in God, and here, this shows we don't believe in God. We're not afraid to do things which according to the theists, will bring them grossly sinful reactions. We're not afraid to garland Lord Ram with shoes. It's horrible to say, but people are doing that. They're not afraid. They don't think that any reactionist comes to them. Or even if it does, they don't. They say, "All right, I'll take, what's the harm? I'll take that." So that is foolish fearlessness. There's different kinds of fearlessness. One is fearlessness that one will be protected by the Supreme Lord. Another is that, well, even if you know you'll get punished, you don't care about the consequences. That is extremely foolish. You see the policeman and you drive through the red light anyway. And he takes your number and you get your license taken away. And then you can't drive anymore. Or if you do drive anymore, you'll be put in prison. Quite likely. Or fearlessness can come from a sense that, well, the law can't touch me. Just like a big mafia leader who's paying off all the police. He'll drive through the red light. And then the police, they chase after him and catch him and say, "Oh, it's him. Oh, okay." They fear him. And he's not afraid of that. He's not afraid of them, and he's proud that I'm not afraid of the police. They're afraid of me. This low constable, I can have him removed or shot if necessary. But this is foolishness, because one may become a big man who others are afraid of, just like Saddam Hussein. People were afraid of him in his own country. But he had to die eventually. And everyone succumbs to that fate. Whether, of course, Saddam Hussein was eventually toppled from power and executed. But even others who, big leaders, they may go their whole life as big leaders, but eventually they have to succumb to death. So fear is a major factor in this material world. It is known as the world of fear. Everyone is afraid of death. They may not say, but they are. Or they're afraid of loss of prestige. They're afraid of suffering. So much effort in modern society is to remove people's suffering, to make them comfortable. All kinds of facilities to make people comfortable. So nowadays people, if it's a little bit hot, they become disturbed. And they have to have air conditioning, electric fans. They can't tolerate if it's a little bit hot. Or if they have to walk some distance, they become disturbed because they're used to if they go more than 100 meters to taking a vehicle. So all arrangements to make us physically comfortable out of fear of discomfort. Fear is a major factor. Why do we act as we do? One major reason that we act in ways that we do are out of social conditioning, that we're afraid if we act in any other way that people will laugh at us or think we're stupid or call us bad names. It's a major factor in social conditioning. People either fear of physical punishment, or being chastised by the parent, the young child, they learn after some time that if you act in the wrong way, the parents, they'll be angry with you, maybe physically punish you, or they'll be displeased with you. And then there's various kinds of behavior, just like if the young girls want to go to the college nowadays in salwar kameez, they may be afraid to because all their friends will laugh at them. Oh, why aren't you wearing jeans and t-shirt? So social conditioning. They're afraid of being laughed at by others. So fear is a factor. And that's just like that in religion. We find it. I don't know about Judaism or other religions, but definitely in Islam and Christianity, it's a major factor, fear. Fear God. If you don't do what He says, you'll be punished. In Krishna consciousness, we stress love more, but practically speaking, the love, it's as long as it's not developed, there has to be some fear also. Bhakti yoga is the path of that's often called the yoga of love or the yoga of devotion. But as long as the love is not fully developed, then some factor of fear is there, just like these, the devas, the demigods being mentioned here. They have affection for the Supreme Lord, but it's mentioned here fear. Out of fear they are working. If they don't discharge their responsibility, they'll be in trouble. So fear is there also. They'll lose their position. They'll be punished. Indradev had to fall down, and even the demigods are subject to curses. The moon is cursed and therefore becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. In the Krishna Paksha, in the dark fortnight, becomes gradually wanes. So bhakti yoga is the process to awaken one's dormant love for Krishna. When one's dormant love for Krishna is awakened, then one likes to serve Krishna and does so spontaneously. As long as one is not on that platform, then Rules and regulations have to be accepted. One voluntarily accepts discipline. Discipline, the very word brings with it the sense of discipline, punishment. If you do, the punishment may be perceived in various ways. How do you punish someone who voluntarily takes to a process? Well, as long as they agree to remain within the process, you can withdraw certain privileges or you can express displeasure. And if someone is too bad, then you can estrange them from the society of devotees. That's an extremely severe punishment. There aren't many instances of that in history. But the always the in Krishna consciousness, the putting forth the idea that we have to do this for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. And the fear that's instilled, if you don't do this, then Hari, Guru and Vaishnavas, they will not be pleased. So it's a sense of fear, but it's an exalted sense of fear, because someone might say, well, I don't care. I might care if Hari is displeased because he's God and he can punish me. But the Guru, what does it matter about him? He's just an ordinary person. And then if one develops that mentality, Guru Shu Naramatihi, is just an ordinary person, and we see that there are some persons within the realm of devotional service who are very much keen to show that they don't regard gurus and sadhus as anything special. There was an instance in Bombay when Srila Prabhupada came out from his quarters, and all the devotees who were there outside, they all bowed down except one who just folded his hands together. Prabhupada just walked out. He didn't stop or say, and he just, when he'd gone past, he said to his attendant servant, that is the beginning of his fall down. That he didn't feel any need to offer any special respect. Little respect, but not the required respect to his guru. Now, hopefully Prabhupada's servant went back and told that to the, we don't have any record of that, told that to the errant disciple so that he could correct himself. But that mentality already means that he doesn't take the word of the spiritual master very seriously. And he may not be even taking devotional service very seriously. There's another case where a devotee who'd been Prabhupada's servant, he wanted to leave Prabhupada and devotional service. Prabhupada was trying to keep him in, and then at one point he just let out that, I want to be free, I want to run on the beach and breathe in the lungs and fill up my lungs with fresh air. He felt constrained that I have to be a servant and I have to follow all these regulations. Prabhupada said, okay, then you go. He didn't go, but eventually he left, and Prabhupada, I read the transcript of his memories of Prabhupada. He's an offensive person, actually. But he was giving his memories of Prabhupada in his own cynical way. So Prabhupada then he was just going to leave, and again Prabhupada said, then why are you going? And he said, well, you yourself said that you should only You should only follow one who you can trust. In other words, saying, I don't trust you. And he said, Prabhupada, he didn't say anything, but he looked. He said, the old man, he referred to him, very rascal. He said, he looked very hurt. So he had no fear of offending Srila Prabhupada. That's foolishness. But he wanted his freedom. He didn't want to be in an atmosphere where devotees are always pushing, come on, get up early in the morning. Do service. So, often we see devotees, they think, well, I want to be more free. It's just too much living in the ashram. I'm going to go out and make my own arrangement. And then you become the slave of a wife. The wife will push you in the same way. The only thing, the difference, well, not in the same way. She'll push you to get up early in the morning and go to work to earn money. And can be quite cruel also. And fear of the wife is simply entangles one in sense gratification or the discipline of the wife, but the discipline of being in the ashram and serving under the devotees, that discipline helps us to, if we're in the right consciousness to receive that, that brings us to the stage of love of Krishna. Should do. I mean, if the point is that bhakti yoga means ultimately love, and one only takes to that because, hope, if one is sincere, one takes to that because one wishes to develop love. So the result of following the discipline of bhakti yoga is that one should come to the platform of love. And the loving atmosphere, that should be more prominent than the fearful atmosphere. We see some ashrams within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness where there's the attitude of fear is prevailing. Everyone's afraid of the temple president or whatever. And they're not just afraid, but very afraid. So, little fear is not bad. There should be some authority. But if the prevailing atmosphere is one of fear, then it's unpleasant. We, as I was saying, we see in ISKCON, we'll find this atmosphere in cultures where authoritarianism is acceptable. Authoritarianism, the very term is considered something abominable in the modern Western liberal way of thinking. They very much stress freedom, too much. Freedom, all right, but to some extent. But they don't. Authority is very much, well, at least verbally, it's. Or they try to expunge it from their whole system as much as possible. The teacher in the school doesn't have any authority over the pupils. They're not allowed to punish them if they. Even verbally, if they go beyond the slightest verbal punishment, they can get discharged from their job, sued, fined, maybe even imprisoned. The teacher in traditional culture is supposed to be the best friend of the student, but if they try to give them any personal advice, that look, you should maybe change your behavior, this, that, they can sue them. Isn't it insane? So they're trying, of course, you can't totally expunge authoritarianism. If you go in the army, it's not that they they run it on love and trust in the army. It's run on authority. Or you, in the school, they have this false egalitarianism. They may even call the teachers by their first name. But when you get in a job, you have to do what the boss says. That's considered acceptable. If you hire someone, you can tell them what to do. Because above liberty is money. It's the higher God. But the whole ethos is one of you should have as much freedom as possible. But there are other societies like the ex-communist societies. And in India also, where the influence of the old culture is still very strong, where in the communist societies are very authoritarian, so people have still the culture is going on, even though they've been opened up to the West for one generation almost now. But still, it's still noticeably strong there in the ex-communist countries of what used to be called Eastern Europe, that people, they tend to follow an authority figure. It's good in devotion. It can be good in devotional service. And like this in Asia also, in India, because the old culture is that one respects seniors. It's still going on very strongly. How long, we don't know, but it's still there. If someone has a position, that's considered something very important. So we sometimes see in our ISKCON ashrams that it's going on by an authoritarian system in which the followers, they follow more out of fear and then out of a sense of rather than developing the atmosphere of love, the atmosphere of fear is kept there. And for the manager, it could be considered, or the temple president, it makes it an easy way to manage. I remember one of my ex-temple presidents saying that, oh, wouldn't it be good if I just had a bunch of people who are like automated robots? But then you're not dealing with people. You can make people like robots if you can manipulate the philosophy. Sometimes you hear philosophies like if you don't satisfy the temple president, then you're going to hell, or your bhakti is spoiled. There's no bhakti outside of these four walls that you're living in, and they deify the temple president to the state of being almost more than God. So by manipulating the philosophy, they're able to get people to do what they want. And it's kind of effective, and it makes it easy, but the whole point of running the movement to develop people's natural inclination to serve Krishna is lost. So what's the point? People won't hear lectures like that in such ashrams. They'll hear lectures like, you just have to do what the town president says. If you do that, then Krishna is satisfied. And if you don't, then you're going to hell. All this. I'm no kidding. There are. This kind of thing goes on. So it's true. We should follow the town president. We should follow the authority like that. But it's not all that Krishna consciousness is made of. Even among karmis, they think that they consider that those who do these kind of management studies, they say that a good leader is one who can bring out the potential of others. But this leadership by fear means you get people to do the things that they're supposed to do, but with the wrong attitude, so they don't actually develop their abilities to serve Krishna. And they do it physically, but their intelligence is locked up. Don't think. Just do, don't think. Automated robot. But the tendency to think should be directed towards think of Krishna in various ways and use one's intelligence to serve Krishna in various ways. As Srila Prabhupada said, that we want independently thoughtful brahmanas. So independently means not independent of guru, sadhu or shastra, and that doesn't mean that independent means you just do whatever you like, whenever you like, however you like. But if an atmosphere can be created in which people like to come forward to serve Krishna under the guidance of those who are more experienced in serving Krishna, that is a very conducive atmosphere. That is, then anukulyena Krishna anushilanam is possible. Now, independently thoughtful doesn't mean that you deny everything that anyone says and you become puffed up and you become cynical and this kind of perverted intelligence, that's also not wanted. The devotional mood is required, and we have to see different levels of persons. Maybe for many people in the beginning, it's good to be very strict with them, just like Chanakya Pandit says, regarding how to deal with children. In the beginning, one should be very strict. Actually, in the beginning, not strict at all. When children are first born, then you just indulge them up to the age of 5. Then 5 to 16, very strict. And then after that, again, lenient. The idea is that they should have learned the lessons they had to learn, and if they didn't, well, it's too late anyway. So what's the So in the beginning, when people come, all right, just come, very nice. Then if they want to take up bhajana kriya seriously, then okay, now strict. Just like we see Srila Prabhupada in those early days, 1967, San Francisco, the hippies. Prabhupada was with his disciples. He was very lenient with them. Gradually he became more strict. But then at one point, about 1976 or something, he said to some of his disciples, he was seeing that many of them had long hair. They weren't shaving their heads regularly. And he said, "You're all older students, so there's no use to be very strict with you, but you should understand these things. Why are you not shaving your head regularly?" So they all went and shaved, even though it was a Kadashi. They thought that Prabhupada doesn't like this, and he's made a point of pointing it out, so never mind, it's a Kadashi, let's go and shave. So this all comes under the heading of human relationships or devotee relationships, a much discussed subject. But actually, if Krishna is in the center, then automatically everything becomes very nice. Here it's discussed about fear, the fear of the demigods, the fear that they may be removed from their post. But among the pure devotees of Krishna, the only fear is that Krishna or the Vaishnavas will be dissatisfied. So even though there may be misunderstandings among them, the misunderstanding is on the basis of how we're going to serve Krishna. The attempt is to serve Krishna. They may have different outlooks
on how to do so. But it's a naturally very pleasing atmosphere, Vrindavan atmosphere, very pleasing, because everyone is simply thinking how to satisfy Krishna. Everyone is naturally endowed with all the Vaishnava qualities. So they're all perfect persons. And there's no need to discipline. You must serve Krishna. Otherwise we'll be angry with you. Otherwise we won't give you prasadam. There's no need for that, because everyone is automatically thinking how to serve Krishna. So devotees, they naturally develop all good qualities. They don't have to be beaten. You should do this, you should do that. Automatically they do, automatically. What is that? Sarva Sadgun Sanchari Vaishnava. That's the Bengali in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Bengali synopsis of Yasya Asti Bhakti Bhagavati Kinchana Sarai Gunas Tatra Samasate Suraha. Among devotees, they automatically develop all the good qualities of the demigods. So the qualities are given there, that devotees are mild, truthful, compassionate, humble. All these natural qualities of a devotee develop on the basis of their serving Krishna. So devotees try sincerely to serve Krishna. That is that's what it means to be a devotee. And all good qualities develop within them. At the same time, those good qualities, they are to be distinguished from mundane good qualities. The mundane good qualities are only a reflection of the real good qualities. The real good quality of a devotee is his desire to serve Krishna. Hanuman's burning Lanka is unlimitedly more glorious than the non-violence of the Buddhists. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's becoming angry with Jagai and Madhai, that's the ideal example. The same Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who said, Chunadapi sunichena, tarorapi sahishna, amanina amanadena kirtaniya sadaharihi, was ready to kill Jagai and Madhai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, acting as the acharya, showed that anger, which is considered a very bad quality, and it's mentioned by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita as a demoniac quality, krodha, parusham evaja, mentioned among the bad qualities of the demons, but that anger, when directed against those who are envious of the Supreme Lord and his devotees, becomes a good quality. Whereas the so-called compassion of a non-devotee is useless or worse than useless. Many times I said about this. Mother Teresa is considered a great saint for her activities in helping the physical bodies of a few people. She's lauded as a great saint by foolish people. One neophyte devotee who goes out and distributes one book of Srila Prabhupada's has done unlimitedly more welfare work than thousands of Mother Teresa's could ever do, because she's in ignorance and she's propagating ignorance by calling. There's propagating ignorance to think that's actually beneficial to others to help their bodies. So devotees, they should develop qualities.
But it's not enough simply to say, well, we should develop compassion and humility, good relationships, good feelings. If we stress this over and over without stressing the philosophical basis on which that should develop, then we end up with the mundane counterparts. If we talk about compassion, kindness, humility, but we don't clearly differentiate between the genuine compassion, etc., of a Vaishnava and its perverted reflection, which looks very good to materialists, then when we hear the word compassion, humility, and all this, without knowing what real compassion is, then we'll think that we have to behave among devotees. We look for our examples, then we'll see, oh yes, Mother Teresa was very compassionate. And we see that devotees, they're talking about good relationships, and they look, they read karmi books as if that could help us. I've seen a few devotees have this. There's a collection of anecdotes collected in books called Chicken Soup for the Soul. The very title is demonium. Chicken soup means the idea is that the mother, who's the reservoir of all love, gives chicken soup to her children. So it's like an exchange of love. Bhunkte bhojayate, among the demons. So the idea is that chicken soup, it's something which represents the warm, family, loving feelings. Can you ask him to go somewhere else? So the whole book is about different exchanges between karmis and how they were acting in a loving relationship with each other. Totally mundane. I looked through a few. Just close the door around, Keshav. So we're looking for mundane examples. Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Bigeha Nabhujai. The behavior of a Vaishnav cannot be understood by even a very intelligent, mundane person. Many people were shocked by Srila Prabhupada's behavior. Many devotees, they told him. First time they saw Prabhupada, they surprised how he could be angry. That's a famous incident at the installation of the deities in Amsterdam. The national TV was there. The devotees were totally spaced out, and right in front of, right on national TV, Prabhupada was blasting them. He was just getting more and more and more angry with them. Everything they did was a complete disaster. Then eventually one hippie boy said, "Why are you getting angry? Why don't you just sit down and chant Hare Krishna?" And Prabhupada said, "That's a very good idea." And so he did. He sat down and chanted Hare Krishna. It's very difficult to understand the mind of a pure devotee. He didn't care what the whole public of Holland thought about his seemingly unreasonable anger. He was more concerned that Krishna is calling Krishna and he's not being served properly. That for him was a more important consideration. We're not going to show some artificial mildness when Krishna is not being served properly. So yes, we should develop compassion, but we should know exactly what that means. Otherwise, we had this idea, we talk about serving Vaishnavas, and without clearly understanding that what that means, now we become so much interested in health schemes for Vaishnavas, and we concentrate so much on the material side of looking after their bodies that we think, well, maybe it's better that, you know, just make them feel good, so even if they're not getting up in the morning, or you shouldn't get on their case, or you shouldn't be nasty with them because, you know, you don't hurt their feelings and tell them you're a nonsense or in Maya, or, you know, just make him feel it. And then you become completely artificial like the karmis.
This idea, don't hurt their feelings. The most you have to maintain their sense gratification. No, our motto is just the opposite. Our motto is to break the sense gratification. So the compassion of a non-devotee is to make a facility for other persons to cultivate sense gratification and to aid them in their sense gratification. And the compassion of a devotee is to smash their sense gratification and bring them into service of Krishna. Of course, that can't be done by force. Again, coming to the point of fear. Prabhupada was... He could be very angry, but when we see people, devotees remembering Krishna, Prabhupada, they remember him, with the exception of that rascal I was saying, a few cases like that. They remember him with how compassionate, how loving. Even though that love might have been expressed by many of the Prabhupada's disciples, they were quite fearful of him. I saw that when Prabhupada at Bhaktivedanta Manor, he entered the temple room, which was completely full of devotees. And they were waiting. He was a little late. They were waiting for him to come. And he came in and everyone was very... There was hundreds of devotees in that room, big temple room. And they were all very awesome. Prabhupada came in and the kirtan stopped, and they made a path for Prabhupada to walk up, and the whole mood was one of great awe, great reverence. So most devotees were there. They had a relationship or feeling somewhat distant with Prabhupada. I remember seeing in that visit at the manor for the first time, seeing Mukunda. Now he's Mukunda Prabhu, now he's Mukunda Goswami. I saw that among the many devotees, Prabhupada was talking to him in a familiar way, and he was answering respectfully, but it's like, you know, people who know each other. I didn't know at the time. It was like that. I saw that. And Prabhupada immediately related to him more than any of the other devotees. So, but most of the devotees, it was feeling of... fear was there. Fear not in the sense of... not like Stalinistic fear, but a sense of very great respect. So Prabhupada, he taught the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Who are we? Who is Krishna? Why we have to serve Krishna? If we don't, the first thing is out of fear. If we don't, then we have to suffer. So fear is there. And then, but the more developed stage, yes, we just want to serve Krishna. He's so wonderful. And then in the more developed stage, we don't even think about it. About whether or not we should serve Krishna. It's just one's whole being is suffused with the desire to serve Krishna, and it's just a matter of how to do so under various circumstances. In the beginning, there may be some fear, but Srila Prabhupada, like I said, he taught the Sambandha Gyan. He taught the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in great detail, so that we could understand that it is in our own best interest to serve Krishna. And automatically by serving him, then the good qualities of a Vaishnava develop in one. But the basis of understanding is this Sambandha Gyan. if we speak about prayoja tattva, the perfect stage, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, without properly understanding what is sambandha gyan, then we're certain to misunderstand. Or even if we talk about abhideya, the process of devotional service, without understanding the philosophy properly, then again, we do this and we do that, but we don't understand why we should be doing it. And if we don't understand, then automatically we have to misunderstand. And even if we talk so much about developing this quality and that quality and another quality, which is actually the level of prayoja, prem prayoja, one who has got the transcendental good qualities, that these qualities automatically manifest in one. But if one doesn't have the basic understanding, unless that's very clearly embedded in our beings, that we're not the body, but that we're spirit soul, we're eternal servants of Krishna, with all the philosophical ramifications as given in Shastra, then again, that same thing. We'll talk of humility, but and we'll act in a humble way. But if it's not based on understanding, then it won't be actual humility. It can be a show of that. And then it comes to what we find in Karmi society. When someone behaves humbly, he does so just as a show or to take advantage of someone. We see among the Sahajiyas of Bengal, big show of humility, but it's a show, that's all. They don't follow even the basic principles of devotional service, but they make a big show of humility because they got the idea, well, that's what you're supposed to do. So what they call what actually happens is because they talk a lot about humility and they have the idea you should be humble. They don't actually develop humility, but they develop the ability to mimic humility, and that's what they think humility is. They think that the show of humility is humility, and the actual humility of a Vaishnava, they resent that. When in actual, they can't recognize an actual Vaishnava because they redefined what it means in terms of just making a show. So we should be very careful of this. So should we have fear or love? Well, in the beginning stages, we can't expect pure love, but if we have pure fear, that's not very favorable either. So loving atmosphere, encouraging atmosphere, encouraging everyone to serve Krishna. I remember, again, from when I first joined in the temple, I was just, maybe the first, second or third day I was in the temple. And I had been given to clean, and my mother used to want me to clean the house. I never used to like to do that. So I was doing it in a sloppy way. And temple commander came and said, look, I'm going to show you how to clean for Krishna. And the point was for Krishna. Oh, then I got it. Okay. All right, cleaning for Krishna. It's not just cleaning because it's a duty that has to be done. This is for Krishna. So that's the point that we do everything. Krishnarte, tadarte akila cheshta. Everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. Then everything else develops very nicely. But as long as we don't understand, then some pushing is, do this, it's good for you, you must do it. But unless that, it's maybe at some stage that we push people like that, but unless we can develop in people the desire to serve Krishna without having to push them and cajole them, then we haven't been very successful in developing their Krishna consciousness. And if the atmosphere in the temple is like that, as we see in some places, the one of fear, then it's not a happy atmosphere. And that is not good. So love, yes, love is wanted. Love and fear and service attitude should be cultivated. And service attitude means encouraging everyone to serve, because that is the natural function of the soul, to serve Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question about this?
In regard to this demigod sphere, if we say that in terms of the two make somebody do something, one is up to love, one is up to fear. So if they out of fear doing, that means that, can we say that means that they have not really loved, or can we extend that?
Talking about the demigods, yeah, their love is not developed. That's what I'm saying. They have affection for Krishna, but they're not pure devotees. So the fear factor.
So the fear can be also, they are afraid that their desire will be granted.
They feel afraid they may be removed from their post, like this.
Not only fear that God will find, but they have not fulfilled their material desires.
Yeah. Hare Krishna.